It's a joy to see everyone. And to be back out of my Kaivalya cocoon that I've been in for this week to prepare for this very important retreat, more important than I realized as I prepared for it and was unprepared for what I learned. The title, if it's not obsolete, From Chaos to Coherence, The Arc of Consciousness at the End of the Age. ARC as A-R-C, but it could probably also be A-R-K and be relevant at that level as well. But by ARC, we primarily mean the trajectory of consciousness, because whether you are aware of it or not, consciousness, the qualities of consciousness are morphing very rapidly. And these qualities are correlated with the rapid changes, devolution, decomposition taking place on the external world level. The inner and the outer are always in correlation, even though they are not causally related. They are related by synchronicity, by analogy and homology and symbolic attunement, fractal self-similarity even. So this retreat is about our consciousness and about what is happening to it. And how to respond, if response is even possible, to the internal events as well as the external ones that are occurring psychologically and somatically very often and karmically and politically and in every other way in terms of the holographic movie that you may or may not be embedded in. So that's what the retreat is about. I hope everyone is here because that's what you wanted to hear about, to know about, to discuss. However, I also have to say that what I discovered along the way may end up being a little shocking to the preconceptions one may have about the arc of consciousness and about the operative level of consciousness that you may now be using, the bandwidth of the spectrum of consciousness that you may be attuned to, you may discover is obsolete, that it doesn't serve you anymore and it doesn't give you any useful information or any a clear navigational instruction to deal with the various reefs and other obstacles in the ocean of consciousness that we face in the dire straits through which we are sailing. So that's what the retreat is about. And now I'll welcome all the people who came to this retreat, who may now be sorry that you have. But in any case, to all of the retreatants, I want to wish you a very warm welcome and blessings for making use of this retreat to attain whatever is the highest goal that you have for your consciousness. To attain while you are alive in the body. And of course, we don't know how long that time is. So the more one is aware of the urgency of the need to reach that highest goal, the good news is that the energy required to attain it is available, accessible to you, without obstacle, if you want it. The only obstacle is that you probably don't want it, or at least you don't want the highest potentiality of consciousness. You'll settle for a lower comfort zone than the supreme reality. That's up to you. But my job is to give you a map to get to the peak of the mountain of God, if you want to go there. If not, yeah, there's a lot of very beautiful panoramic sights at different altitudes that can all be enjoyed. And some that are not so nice. So this is the a time, in a certain sense, of decisive transformation in the arc, the karmic art or arc, or the destiny of our individual consciousness, that it will be determined by deepest level of intentionality that is in your heart, most authentic, and that which is most awake and most coherent. So chaos to coherence is the trajectory that we must go in to be able to even know what is the highest choice that we could make at this time. And yet, we're in a world that is ever more chaotic. And for most, that correlates with an ever more chaotic consciousness. And by chaotic, a sense that varies with every individual, but a consciousness that is emotionally not entirely stable, that has dissociated fragments that see things in contradictory ways, and there isn't a consistent sense of objectivity or even subjectivity, and very often a sense of weakness, neediness, and a kind of self-assessment of unworthiness that brings one down to very low vibrational frequencies and causes one to create or sustain or increase your karmic attachments to the phenomenal plane, in order to feel more secure or more safe in a very unsafe world, rather than taking refuge with the Lord, with the supreme level of consciousness for your salvation, but holding on to lower levels of temporary forms of illusory security, rather than the only true secure abode and redemptive center of consciousness that is true, that is real, and that is unfailing. So that's the light that we must reach at the end of whatever tunnel we might be in. Or perhaps we have completed the dark night of the soul, and we're already abiding in the world of light, and basking in the light of God, and transmitting that joy of having attained the real self. And so we are at the end of the age, or very near it. And those of you who have studied religions, and probably everyone here and probably everyone on the live stream has had interest in the world's spiritual traditions, I don't know of one that has not prophesied that there will be an end of time, a messianic age, the apocalypse, the hour of truth, the moment of the return of God to the world, the coming of second coming of Christ, the first coming of the Mahdi, the last coming of Vishnu, whatever is the chosen avataric strain that you find most persuasive, but they are all saying the same thing. And they say the sign that you will know that you're in that time is the world will have gone mad, the societies will be coming apart, will be filled with perversion and psychopathic leaders or rulers and evil arbitrary laws that are actually producing genocidal attacks on the populations and other destructive tendencies that are enslaving the consciousness to the big other out there and to the lowest level of coherence internally. So there's mind control attacks that are subjectively affecting us. It affects us through electromagnetic pulses and energy fields. It affects us through disinformation and the energies one gets from the internet and from films that are being made these days. All of the messages that we are getting are used propagandistically to control your consciousness and keep it holding on to various prejudices and preconceptions, assumptions, beliefs, etc., that hold you in a state of powerlessness, helplessness, stupidity, denial, and inability to cope with the reality of what is happening within the phenomenal plane, and a lack of attunement to what is happening at the higher planes. How many can relate to that situation? Yeah, most of you can. I'm not talking about some foreign world. Most people can recognize that this is the kind of thing that's happening, yes? So most people who wouldn't be here if you weren't out of denial to at least that level of political awakening, social awakening. But I'm not interested in that in this retreat, okay? So let's all stipulate that we recognize what's going on in the phenomenal plane. We are way past worrying about the future. You can't plan the future anymore. Is there anyone who believes you can plan your future, you know? Can you even trust that your money will be worth anything in a short time? Or that the country you might think you belong to will even exist? You know, if not a civil war, then a nuclear war or a plague of some kind or an invasion or whatever. But we see everything coming apart in every possible way that it could come apart. And that includes not only the political tyranny and the not only stupidity, but the deliberate self-destruction of the environment and of the human capacity to sustain our collective existence, all being taken from us, stolen. So what kind of future is there, you see? And how much in control are you of it at the level of the ego? If you're still in that mode of consciousness, then, you know, the ego will either be in massive denial or it will be in massive anxiety or despair or some worse kind of mental disorder to escape seeing, knowing, feeling the horror of a zombie apocalypse and becoming part of it. So all of that is prologue that I want to get out of the way, because that's not the focus of this retreat. However, that's probably what has contributed to your being interested in coming to an ashram like this, or coming to a retreat like this and receiving information of the kind that I intend to offer you in this class and the ones that will follow. Can you erase what's on the board? I want to write something else. As I was preparing for this retreat, for the nature of how to escape being a victim of the matrix, how to escape fear. This is not about fear mongering. Some will accuse me of that, but what I want to help everyone reach is a state not only of fearlessness, but of the recognition that the time we are in is the most auspicious period in all of human history, if we know how to take advantage of it. Okay? And so although most people refer to it as the end of days, as the eschaton, as the, Terence McKenna's version, the transcendental object at the end of time, or any of the many different terms for the ultimate revelation and redemption that is on our itinerary for our consciousness, a collective universal redemption, by the way, so no one has anything to worry about. No one will be left behind. It's not that you have to belong to a particular religious group and only those will be saved and the rest damned. No, it's not like that. All souls, all are equally beings of the same divine nature. So there is no differentiation in the sense that all will return to that supreme, supernal light and the blissful energy field of the eternal self. All will, regardless of the karmic situation or the belief system or the level of consciousness, none of that will matter, although those particularities will determine the pathway that must be taken by consciousness to get to the light. It may have to go through different bardo states for cleansing and purification after the death of the body, if that isn't done voluntarily while the body is alive. But everything will have to be cleansed, right, purified, in order to return to the luminous presence of God, and all will be purified and absorbed into the Godhead, right? So in a certain sense, it is not important whether you do sadhana or not. It's not important from that place of the ultimate roundup into the singularity that is going to occur. But the function of one's soul in these final days will determine the relationship to God and to the world and to time and space in terms of the continuity of the circle of time that after the end will find itself in a new beginning. However, the point of this retreat, because none of that is known. The point of this retreat is not to try to get you to believe in a concept of a satyuga, a kingdom of heaven, or even God, or even the soul. I don't want you to take any of this, and I'm sure you won't, but in case anyone has a tendency to accept beliefs that are promulgated, this is not about your beliefs. This is about the realization of the self. Not a belief in it, not faith in it, not a conviction, not a theory, a map, a logic. No, the direct and immediate presence of the Supreme Self. And nothing else is really evidentiarily persuasive, or should be, because all of our concepts as human beings are inaccurate. All of our concepts are inaccurate. They can't be accurate because a finite being cannot understand the infinite, and the real is infinite. And any part of the real, even if it seems finite, is part of the infinite whole. You may believe that there are different beings and we are divided and separate, and my mind is different than your mind, and we are all in our own dream fields and in our own bubbles of projection and of belief of whatever kind we were indoctrinated into, etc. And at the level of the ego, that's temporarily true, but only temporarily and only within the local space of ego consciousness, which, like every bubble, will inevitably pop. And when it pops, then we will realize that everything we thought, everything we believed, it was false. Because the real is so much more, so much beyond anything that could be imagined or felt, even in the spectrum of whatever emotional feeling states that we know, even if we've been on some very powerful drugs and we've gone into ecstasies of different kind, it's nothing like God. It's nothing like the supreme real. And so when the bubble pops and the soul is filled with that light of God and it pops, so that the final liberation of consciousness and absorption into the infinite ocean of presence occurs, no trace of anything that you now think pertains to you will remain. And so, let me write the main teaching of this. So this one concept is the last concept I think that you'll ever need and that maybe will ever arise or emerge in your consciousness. The time of the concept is over. That's where we are right now in the arc of consciousness. The time of the concept. What does that mean? the human ego lives at the level of representation. It doesn't live in the real. It occasionally dips down into the real for bits of jouissance, bits of sensory enjoyment. But for the most time, most of the time you're awake, you're living in your head, you're living in your mind, you're living in future plans, in past memories, you're living in what ifs and scenarios that you're trying to figure out if they will lead to good results. You're calculating this and that. You're worrying about this and that. You're not present. You're not here. That's the ego's burden. That's the reason for its incoherence. And so the ego has lived in and upon concepts. And most of those concepts that it has built its paradigm of reality on are assumed to be true without ever having been proven. They are givens. They are assumptions. They are axioms. And these preconceptions have determined the nature of how we perceive reality, how we interpret the events that come. We don't see the world as it is. We see our own consciousness reflected back to us. That's the world. It's nothing else but our consciousness being projected into a mirror, and then that mirror as a three-dimensional holographic mirror becomes present as a world, but it is not a world. And the only way we recognize that it is not a world is by going into a state of unmediated presence. Okay, unmediated. In other words, presence that is not contextualized by thought. Okay? Now, it's very difficult. You think it may be easy to be in a state of presence that is not contextualized by thought, but it's very difficult. In fact, it can take a long period of practice before you understand even what such a state is or feels like. And one of the reasons is there's an assumption that whatever is being perceived is my perception. Whatever is being thought is my thought. But is that something you know for a fact, or is that an assumption? You see, that I thought is a representation. But what does it represent? The ego assumes, well, of course I know who I am. I was born at this date, and these are my parents, and we lived here, and we went through this and that. And one uses one's biography or autobiography as an identificatory emblem. But who went through all of those biographical experiences? What is the I? What is that presence? What's its nature? And it's not simply, a neural stimulation of part of the brain. It is that which is primary. It is the real. But do I know really what I mean when I use the word I? Or do I mean it, the body, the shell, the vessel, rather than the consciousness operating the vessel. So until the question, who am I, is answered accurately, you understand the real meaning of I, and it's not an accident that God in the Torah defines himself as I am. I am that I am, if you wish, but it's that key concept of presence, I amness, which is not something learned, it's something inherent and immediate. And can never be lost. Even in deep sleep, that awareness is present. And that's why you'll hear the alarm clock go off, even if you're in deep sleep. Why did you hear it? You know, the awareness is present, no matter what the state of consciousness. It's well known that even if someone's in a coma, they are conscious. Even if they're dead, it's known that they're conscious because of near-death experiences. In which people have been clinically dead, sometimes for now very long periods. So there is no doubt scientifically that your consciousness, the I, is not inherently related to the body of your biographical vehicle. It has nothing to do with that. They are at two entirely different levels of being. And if you confuse those levels, you can never get out of the matrix. You can never know who you are, really, meaning the one self that is real. There's one self. You have to discover this, but you will discover it if you enter and stay in the real self, that pure immediate presence of awareness, uninterpreted. And if you stay in it long enough, you will recognize that the same self is operating and choreographing everything that occurs. That this is a movie, and in a movie, it's one intelligence beaming the film, the scenario, one director, one script, one truth, even though there may be many, many subplots and great complexity that occurs in the film, but the principle behind it is absolute simplicity and unity. So, human beings in Kali Yuga, in this last period, have taken on and living under the assumption that I refers to the body. And thus, we call this level of consciousness ego consciousness. And the ego identified with the body has itself been morphing. So the ego has a structure. It has a certain dynamic. Each ego has a different range. Different attitudes and orientations and different strategies for dealing with the other and for negotiating the world and different types of attachments and different types of ideals and different types of whatevers are the landmarks of the symbolic internal map of your consciousness in terms of where you want to go in your monopoly game, all right? But everyone is playing a certain game. For some, maybe it's poker. For some, maybe, you know, it's chess or Go. But everyone's playing a game. And who are you playing against, you see, if not your own intelligence that is being reflected back to you. And creating a sense of opposition, of resistance, or of completion, you see? So the world lures the ego, which is a partial consciousness. It's not the whole, it's not total. And the ego lacks all kinds of functions, capacities, and essences that cause it to be attracted to others who may have complementary lacks, but also skills, capacities, talents, energies, desires, projected fantasies that can fit in with your own, at least temporarily, and then create collusions and interconnections that may serve you for a time and then may hold you back. And as you all know, it's much easier to get into one of those than to get out of it when it no longer serves you. And so yogis tend to suggest that you avoid as many attachments as possible to minimize not only the suffering, but also minimize the incoherence and the weakness, because you can't stand the loss of a certain object of security or of approval and validation. And so the practice of yoga is in order to free oneself from any egoic delusion and weakness that prevents its self-liberation. So where are we with concepts? We are the human being in its trajectory in the modern and even more so the postmodern period has been deliberately by the governments of the world, particularly in the West, have dumbed down the educational system, the cultural habitus, and have created a very consumerist, materialist, obedient citizenry or subjects of whatever is the alleged authority that has control of the social institutions and the military and the political power centers, etc. But there has been a deliberate weakening of your power to think and your power to discern when you're being lied to and when you need to put up your guard against waves of disinformation that could cause you to make some very egregious errors in judgment. So the tendency, the intention of the deep states is to create a population that is willing to be, let's say, thinned out, culled, without resisting very effectively, and even denying that it's happening, and agreeing to be an accomplice to it and a victim of it because of a subconscious death drive that is actually in agreement with the enslavement and depopulation projects that are happening. So everything that is occurring because it is being collectively dreamed to occur. It's not happening against our will, even though many will feel that way consciously. But if you understand the real nature of the ego's iceberg, most of which is subconscious and suppressed and repressed, if you become aware of that, you will understand why you have bought into whatever lies you have bought into, why you have created the attachments you have, and why you may have the psychosomatic burdens that you may be carrying, or the emotional or the karmic burdens, etc. And what we discover is that as we go forward, people are less and less able to even use concepts coherently. The capacity to think that we always took for granted, well, yes, Homo sapiens, right? We're sapient, we're wise, we can think clearly, we're the crown of creation. Well, no, the ability to think clearly is being lost. And most people have so lost their capacity to discern that they believe that their delusions are reality. They are no longer able to question the thoughts that arise in their own mind. And if you cannot critically think about your own thoughts, you are not truly self-aware. This is the purpose of the soul. The soul is there to observe and overrule the ego's thoughts. The soul contains the buddhi. The buddhi, which is famous in the term Buddha, Buddha nature, the awakened one. The soul is our awakened intelligence. The ego is our intelligence asleep. And buying into whatever thoughts arise and thinking, well, it must be true, I'm thinking it. And never being able to question one's frame of reference. So the ego does not want your spiritual liberation. It does not want the awakening of your soul. And your soul is in a battle with the ego. If it's awake enough to realize that there are two conflictive intentions, and that the ego does not have the soul's welfare as its top priority, or even any priority. If you don't realize that, and that you have to make a decision, am I the ego or am I the soul? If that primary discernment of difference is not thoroughly recognized, then you will be fooled by an imposter who is impersonating you and telling you what to think and how to feel and what to do on the basis of that, right? And because the ego does not want you to awaken as a soul, it doesn't want you to be liberated into God consciousness, because it will die, the ego will disappear, and all that it treasures and believes in will be dissolved. So the ego does not want your awakening. It does not want your intelligence to open up and be able to function. It wants to keep you dumbed down. It's an accomplice of the big other because it was created by the other. So, most people in ego consciousness will project the ego's unconscious, or let's say subconscious. In other words, you're not aware of it, but there are parts of your ego dissociated from your waking consciousness that want you to lead a different kind of life than your conscious mind wants. Probably a life that's much more comfortable in the sensory realm and doesn't want the realm of pure spirit that is way too ungraspable and ineffable and uncontrollable for it. It wants to be in control. Right? And to be in control of you so that you act according to its mandates and algorithms and beliefs to keep it in business. And if you believe it, that's called being a lost soul. And you will act on it, usually very self-righteously, you know, because the ego will project, oh, these people are negative, or this shouldn't be like this. I'm out of here. I'm leaving. I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. And it's based on a a projection of the ego's desire to have the enjoyment of a life without dharma, without discipline, without sacrifice, without growth, without having to learn horrible things about people that you didn't want to know, and about the world, and about yourself. And the worst part and the most insulting part of spirituality is you have to eat the fact that you don't exist. I mean, that's the ultimate insult to the ego. Does any ego want to take in, really, I don't exist? I am a self-fulfilling delusion? Yeah, that's our nature. Well, and unless you're willing to take that in, you haven't even begun the spiritual journey, which is why it's called the hero's journey, because it takes a very heroic and courageous assault upon your delusions and opening up to truths that you do not want to see and often think you cannot bear to feel and to know. But it's only through truth that is accurate that we reach that level of consciousness that we call the heart, which is the essence of the soul's love for God, for truth, for freedom, for real empowerment that will extract you from the ego's grip and enable you to be free. To be free in immediate presence, no longer disturbed by the ego's thoughts, its concepts, its beliefs, its projections, its poison, its negative emotions, its self-hatred and its hatred of others and its anger and its distrust and paranoia and envy, all of those things that make up the ego's poison have to be eliminated through the truth that you don't even really exist. That's the good news, because it means that the poison isn't real, the sinfulness isn't real, the ego's weakness isn't real, the ego's fantasies are not real. None of it is real. And when you have fully digested that truth, then you are free to be who you really are. I was saying in a recent teaching that the final form of the hero, because this is the hero's journey, the final form of the hero is the psychopath. Okay. And that recent films all have an anti-hero, a psychopath. But the important point to understand is that you have to be a psychopath. Almost everyone is at least in some fragments of their ego psychopathic, or having psychopathic traits, meaning you don't give a damn about the society, about the other, about the system. The system sucks, it's false, it's evil, it deserves to be beaten, right? So I'm not in it to serve any of these political institutions or religious institutions that are now hypocritical and more like the Antichrist than anything Christian or anything, you know, sacred. And that I don't believe any of it. I'm totally cynical. I totally think the world is nuts. And I'm only in it for myself, all right? You need to be a psychopath in order to become liberated, you see? But you need to be an ex-psychopath who is now pathologically related to a pathological ego and saying, no more, I'm done with it, because it's my own ego that is projected as this world that I hate. It's my own dream. It's my own nightmare. It's my own mind that I'm stuck in, you see? So you have to take the anger and the hatred of the ego and its rejection of what is to its highest level. And then you realize that it was in that psychopathic fragment that you had the most intelligence, because you had to be more awake than the others to beat them at the game, whatever the game was you were playing. But once you recognize that who you're actually playing with is the infinite source of consciousness that has given you the gift of life and the capacity for the tiny crumb of intelligence that you're so proud of, but when you recognize the infinite nature of the intelligence of the real self, you cannot do anything but finally surrender. But see, the psychopath will never surrender. Definitely not to God, right? So how do you get around that? How does I'll never surrender, how does that being become liberated? That's the gem, the priceless value of non-duality, you see? I don't have to surrender to anybody. I am the self. But the I that can claim that is only the real self. So yes, the self is I, but the I that I thought I was, who was greater than the self, is non-existent. And if I can come to terms with that and accept the non-duality, then I am the blissful one. I am the immediate presence without boundaries and without limitations of any kind. So, at the lower end of the ego, it doesn't have the power to conceptualize anymore. It just has imaginary ideas and fantasies and projections, nothing symbolic or logical in a true sense. And at the upper end of the spectrum, one transcends the conceptual, because no concept can contain the infinite truth and power of God consciousness. It can't be contained, it can't be defined, it can't be limited, it can't be conceived. And that it that can't be conceived is I, that is the self. That can only be known when the illusory, the false self, the limited identity is completely absorbed into the absolute that is eternity, eternity itself. So we have reached the moment when concepts are useless on the spiritual journey. That's the point I want to leave you with tonight. Too many people come on this this path and they want to take a lot of notes, you know, and they think that their treasure is their notes. And the more thick and fat their notebooks are, the more they know. But the truth is that it is not about symbolic conceptual knowledge. All of this is just a prologue to understand why you have to throw out all your concepts, including any concepts you happen to hear me suggest. All of them are inadequate and false. They will not help you, because there is no you to be helped. That concept has to be removed because you are not other than the one self. You're already there. There's no path. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to think. There's nothing to practice. All of that is the ego's form of deferment and delay and denial. And first I have to read the Vedas and the Upanishads, you know, and then I'll think about liberation. You ain't got time for that, you know. First I'll read the Quran, and I'll read, you know, all of the Christian mystics, and I'll read the Zohar, and I'll read all of the Kabbalistic texts, or I'll read all the Taoist. There's no time anymore for that. There's no time, and none of it is accurate. None of it will help you to grasp who you are. The only medicine is immediate presence. Because you already are the self. But as soon as you are absent by going into thoughts and into emotions and into memories and into beliefs and objections and doubts, and attachments that take you away from presence, and you enter into worries and plans, all of that, you lose yourself. You pay a huge price for thinking that you must think your way out of your troubles rather than ascend to a level of intelligence that knows how to resolve the difficulties without thinking, without calculating. It's that immediate intuitive aha that we call the Tao. There's an immediate attunement to truth if you are in immediacy of presence. Now, I have to make one clarification. At the ego level, presence seems to be immediate, unmediated. In other words, you'll only get there if your mind is silent. And that silence or stillness, the longer it stays without interruption, the more you realize the boundarylessness of the self and its complete higher dimensionality than the body or the world or time or space or any of the concepts that have located you. You become a non-local field of presence. No longer the person you thought you were. That's just an object among infinite nodes of consciousness that are a network of interconnectivity. But there's a presence that transcends all of that. And once that the consciousness is centered in that level, there is a realization that the real is not actually unmediated, that it's the union of a trinity of forces. There is the light that shines, and there is the awareness that sees the light. And there is a mediating mirror that catches the light and shines it into the awareness to unify light and awareness as a whole. But it could not happen without the mirror. That mirror in the ancient world by the Gnostics was called Sophia. And she is the divine feminine. And she unites, this is the theosophy of Jacob Boehme that got translated later and turned into philosophy by Hegel. But this is the form that Gnostic philosophy has taken for thousands of years, and that it is Sophia who mediates the light of the Father and the awareness of the Son, and then shines that light out of her mirror as the Holy Spirit that fills the world with that divine light and bliss and love that is so bright that the illusion of the world is washed away and there is only the light of God that remains. The light and awareness as one. And so when we are in the soul consciousness, the soul in a sense functions as Sophia. The soul is feminine, the divine feminine. Egos are all male, they're phallic. Whether you're in a female body or a male body, it doesn't matter. But the soul is feminine. The soul is the higher power than the ego. The ego wants control, it wants mastery, dominance, power, determination, agency. It wants all of that. No, the soul is surrendered, receptive, is filled with God's light and with the awareness that creates the ultimate revelation and brings redemption. But she is purely that being of love that unifies and that creates universal realization. And so there must be an internal unification of the masculine and the feminine through the surrender of the masculine to the feminine internally, the surrender of the ego to the soul, and then the soul's absorption in love with the beloved, the ultimate absolute reality. And it is this that completes the journey. But this is always present as our immediate nature. We have never left that supreme consciousness that is dreaming all of this, creating the mirror, emanating the light, manifesting as awareness, and as creative intelligence, and bringing to a culmination all of the symbolic machinations of consciousness that have produced a world that we cannot be free of until we have given it its highest meaningfulness on the basis of the knowledge and the will of God. And that is the final concept that then enables us to be free. So this is the if you wish to call it a path to liberation, but it's not really a path because you're already liberated. You were never in bondage because the ego doesn't really exist. And there's only presence. Even when you are caught up in thoughts, you are present to the thoughts. So you never leave the state of presence. Even if you're in a dream, you're present to a dream world. If you're in deep sleep, you're present to the light, but your ego's not there to recognize it, but the self recognizes itself. And then all of this, all of the states of consciousness that alternate are contained within a presence that never changes, is never lost from birth to death and beyond, because the self is never born and never dies. And this eternal container of consciousness is the all-encompassing, all-saturating, all-absorbing whole self of cosmic dimensionality that is, in fact, our true nature. So, I didn't leave any time for questions, because all questions are worthless. They are only ways of delaying, because what you're wanting in a question is a concept as an answer. And any concept that you're given will actually hide the answer from you. Concepts are the veils. We have to see through the veils, not be captured by them. And then we will know freedom and be able to enjoy the veil, because it's a beautiful drama, without having to feel alienated from it, and recognize that we are now in the denouement of that tragicomedy that we are co-creating as the multiplicity that is really the one. So I hope that this has made some sense to you. And tomorrow we will go into the practice of self-realization much more intensively. But don't wait for that. Be here now. Be the self. Realize presence without thought, without projection. And you'll realize that there is no world. There is no other. It's all your mind, your dream. And you are not the character in the dream that you think you are, but the whole intelligence that constitutes the dream itself, and the power to awaken from it.